Hickory Dickory Dock, the expat ran to the shop, a gin or two, a new pair of shoes. Hickory Dickory Dock.
Says episode 27.
How are you?
I'm good.
I'm getting ready to get on that plane and head to the Australian winter.
Oh my gosh, you leave tomorrow, right?
No, earlier Monday. And I actually don't think I then arrive until Tuesday night. Tuesday night I arrive in Sydney.
Okay, so Says, at the end of last week's podcast, mm-hmm. we were having a chat about sort of what you were looking forward to about heading home. And somehow we got on to the whole shopping list that happens when you are home. I know my sister-in-law has just returned to Hong Kong. She's a Sydney girl, and she was commenting that she's returned to Hong Kong with what feels like a whole new wardrobe, because you just get a bit carried away about, you know, what's available. Anyway, we were talking about the stuff that was on our list, and I asked you sort of what was on your list and was talking about what was on my list, and we thought, well, this would make a really good podcast.
And it has, because everyone's commenting on your Facebook page and the Two Fat Expats Facebook page, and it's been tampons, clearly, is the number one. Every second person is mentioning tampons. I never do a tampon shop. I buy them here.
Can I get really personal and ask you which brand you buy in the Middle East?
I tend to buy sometimes the Boots brand are quite good. And then there's another brand that you can get from all of the supermarkets here. I think it's called AB brand.
I think, it's AB or OB. It's one of those.
OB,
because I wrote a post years ago for Mamma Mia, and it was about the OB situation, because that's what brought it to my attention, was there was an article in the New York Times about the OB brand being low in stock in New York, and it was becoming a crisis. And I've noticed they are also a very popular brand in the Middle East.
Yes.
But it's this whole applicator or not applicator.
And this is the thing. In Australia, we're not really on applicators, I wasn't. And then I moved to the Middle East, and everything was about the applicator. I was like, how the hell do you? It was like a contraption.
I know, well, it's
like once I got the hang of it, I was like, I'm all about the applicator.
Oh, you are. See, I'm not.
And yeah, I love the applicator.
Yeah. My lovely friend Smaggle, who is a fantastic Aussie blogger, she always says that using an applicator, there is a bit like having someone else put your glasses on for you.
Yeah. No, I am pro applicator now. And actually, when we leave the Middle East, that's probably what I'll take home with me, all the OB brands that I can't get back in Australia.
Oh, see, I use the OBs without the applicator. That's why I like them. Oh, I'm not an applicator girl. Because my thing with the applicator is then you really need to have a rubbish bin somewhere close by to put your applicator.
Yes, but I do all of my tampon changing in the bathroom.
Yes. In your house? Never, ever? Outside?
Oh, occasionally outside, but then it's like I'm not like out in the open. I'm in a bathroom and they have little bins in the public bathroom. I'm not wearing it out in the aisle at Carrefour.
I need the rubbish bin and I need places to put, and I just don't need that. Oh my God, what am I going to do with this applicator?
Like if you're at someone's house or something.
Yes, what if they don't have a bin? Then what do you do?
Oh, then you're caught short. That hasn't happened to me yet.
Back to the whole tampons featuring prominently. They really did. Like I almost named that post Tampons in Transit, because but I knew that we wanted to kind of focus on what was on your list. Like you said, when I had put, you know, what's on your list, every second person just about put tampons. Yep. And I loved one of our readers, Liz, had said that she'd gone back with just basically a suitcase full of tampons, thinking, well, if this aeroplane goes down, I'm going to dry up the South China Sea stash.
I wonder what the customs people must think of everything that comes through in our suitcases.
Oh, yeah, and also the fact that so many women have mentioned to me in private and on the 4Kids 20 Suitcases page that not only do they go back with a suitcase full of tampons, but they sprinkle their tampons all over the top of their luggage because they know that it stops people rifling through their luggage because
it's just uncomfortable.
A lot of customs people appear to be men, and when they pick up the, lift up the suitcase and it's just this sea of tampons,
they're
not so keen. No. It's quite interesting, isn't it? So I was also very interested to hear, because I have lived in some fairly remote locations where we've had to take all sorts of supplies in. But I'm always interested that people who live in places that you think would have absolutely everything you'd need, something like a Dubai, the things that people take there. And I had a really interesting comment from a woman called Courtney, not Courtney, but Courtney. And she was saying that taking back to Dubai, she takes things like bras, which seems to be also another common thing. Well, did it? Because I wondered, is it if you've got really big boobs or really little boobs, you need specific bras maybe?
Well, see, I'm well endowed in the chest area, and for me, the Marks & Spencer bras are best in the world.
They have the over-the-shoulder boulder holders?
Yes. Yes, I always buy my bras and underwear here, never back home.
Yeah, well, I think Marks & Sparks are really good for underwear, so I was surprised about the two. Maybe it's an American thing, because I think that Courtney was from America as well, because she was saying she also takes back dryer sheets, which I can remember were a huge thing when we lived in North America. Everyone was putting these dryer sheets in their dryers. Do you use those?
My mum uses the dryer sheets. I don't know if I've ever seen them here in Doha. I've seen the colour stay or whatever it is, you know, the sheets that you put in to make sure your colour doesn't run. Every now and then I've seen them, but no, I've never seen dry sheets here.
And the other one people tend to take back to the Middle East is vanilla extract.
There's a big difference between vanilla extract and vanilla essence. So vanilla essence you can get here, but that's not proper vanilla, so you can't get vanilla extract here.
I've actually taken vanilla pods back with me as well in the past, with vanilla beans. And the other one in the Middle East that people seem keen on is headache tablets, because they don't get the same strength headache tablets as you.
And that's my drug of choice. I pop those like there's no tomorrow. I love a bit of Nurofen when I go
So I was thinking, says, what do Aussies take back? What do Australians take back to where they're going?
Well, for me, I thought I was the only person who did this, but then someone else commented on the Two Fat Expats page. We have two big supermarket chains back home called Coles and Woolworths, which I guess is similar to your Tesco's and Sainsbury's in the UK. And the Coles and Woolies they're like $2, $2.50. They're just silver kitchen tongs in stainless steel. They're the perfect, I just love those tongs. And I can't get that exact type of tong here in the Middle East. I can get plenty of tongs, but I can't get those ones. So I always bring back three or four of those, but they're just my favourite. So I bring those home every year.
Anything one else? Thing what else do you take back?
I realised when we arrived in Abu Dhabi that I really missed was the magic can openers. You know those whiz-bang can, not the electric ones, the brand's called Magican. And I think they're an American brand, but you could get them in Australia, but we couldn't get them in Abu Dhabi. And it wasn't until I probably opened three or four cans of, I don't know, chopped tomatoes or whatever it was, that I really missed my Magican. So when Mum and Dad came over for their first visit to Abu Dhabi, that was the one thing Mum in her suitcase was a Magican for me, and I still have it.
I don't have a Magican, but you know I want one now, don't you?
Just go down to your local kitchenware store and get a magic. They'll have them in Target and Kmart.
All right, okay. I'll be doing that. Mine is tins of passion fruit syrup for my pavlovas, because to me a pavlova isn't a true pavlova without passion fruit pulp.
Very
on it.
True. And I've never and seen so passion I fruit in Doha.
I have seen passion fruit, and if there's anyone who's currently in Qatar or Doha and needs it, you can find it at Family Foods usually. But it's never quite the same as when you buy those tins of passion fruit syrup to go on your pavlova.
Yes.
And then for me, because really now, I reckon the longer you're away, the less you tend to take back. But what I do think, and we did have a lot of people say that. We had a lot of people say, well, that's what going home is all about, you know, that if you could get everything that you can get at home where you were, well, why be away? And, you know, it's part of the experience and whatever.
Exactly.
I find...
Like I'm not going to come home with 12 cinnamon donuts in my suitcase. I'll just eat them when I'm home, and then I know I'll go a year in between having them.
Yeah. And I think, you know, coming back with all the chocolate and all of that stuff, I probably don't bother like I used to. Like I remember I used to come back with oodles of Freddo frogs and things like that sort of made it feel like home, but I don't do that anymore.
I sort of indulge while I'm there.
Yeah, and I do buy a lot of Bonds underwear when I'm home. That's the one thing I do. I'll go to Big W or Target and I buy oodles of Bonds, knickers, and for me and for the girls as well, and for the kids, just jocks and things like that. And, you know, maybe I might sneak a couple of Cherry Ripes. But the one thing I am bringing back a lot of this time for the last 2 years that I have is since we've had the Nespresso coffee machine, is I find the Nespresso pods quite expensive in Doha. Right. So I tend to buy the less expensive pods that you, that people take for granted that they get in the supermarket in Australia, but you don't find them in.
They're more like the generic brand, but they fit into the Nespresso.
Yeah, that's it. So I'm the girl who's sitting up at 2 o'clock in the morning before the flight goes, opening all the packets of the pods so I can fit as many pods, naked pods, into a Ziploc bag.
You know, here in Doha, we've got a supermarket chain here called Spinneys, and it predominantly sells British dried goods. So you get a lot of the Tesco brands, and you can get all of the English and the Irish tea and butter and everything here. But maybe it's just a lot cheaper back in the UK than it is here.
Yes, yeah. And I think that's the point that came up a lot. And I wonder if it's a good time now to have a listen to our interview. I spoke to Caroline, who is fascinating because she is from Belgium, but their holiday home is in Switzerland, so they tend to go back to Switzerland. But she's now living in Senegal in Africa. And I think that was one of the interesting things is quite often when you see that people are taking these things back, it is not just because you can't get them, but also how expensive those products can be in other parts of the world. So shall we have a listen to Caroline and she can talk about some of the things that she takes back to Senegal.
Okay.
Okay, so tell me, you're in Senegal, but your home is in where?
We are from Belgium originally, but we bought a place in Switzerland, so our base now is in Switzerland.
And how long have you been there?
1 year now.
So tell me just a little bit about Senegal. Had you been travelling before then, or was this your first expat location?
No, we've been travelling for 16 years now. So we started from Belgium. We went to Luxembourg, which is not too far away, for 1.5 years. Then we did Denmark for 4.5 years. Then Switzerland for 1.5. Then Egypt for 4 years, and then 5 months back to Switzerland because of the Egyptian revolution. Then we went to Israel for 3 years, and now in Senegal for 1 year.
Now tell me, when you found out you were going to Senegal, did you send out a note to anyone saying, what do I need to take, or did you get any tips or clues from people, or did you just arrive not knowing what you'd need?
I looked a lot on internet on what I could find there, because it's a French-speaking country, I'm French, so I could find quite a lot. And there are the French supermarkets casino there, so I kind of know what I could find. And then two friends put me in contact with friends of them who live there, which I contacted also to have kind of an idea of what I would need, basically. So, yeah, I did buy lots of mosquito repellent and toothpaste. I made a big stock of that one. Body creams and things like this.
Are you serious? Toothpaste wasn't available?
No, well, not the one we like. There is toothpaste, but not the one we like.
So was there anything that kind of surprised you when you got there and thought, oh, hang on, I didn't realise this was going to be a problem?
Not really a problem. It's more an adaptation, I would say. But it was mostly when I arrived last summer in August, there was not many fruits and vegetables, and it was very poor in this. And I think it was because it was the hot season, and then, you know, you don't have that much fresh fruits and vegetables. But then after, during the year, it went better.
Yes.
But now when I go back, it will be very poor in all these fresh fruits and vegetables. But otherwise, it's okay. You don't find everything, basically, but you find what, you know, you do what with what you find.
That's so true, Carolyn, isn't it? Because you forget that we get so spoiled by seasonal fruit just arrives to us at any time, whereas in other countries you really have to go back to relying on the weather and what's good at the time.
Exactly, yes. But I learned this in Egypt already, you know, going to supermarkets with lists of recipes I wanted to do and then never finding what I needed. So you just have to make up and...
Yes, yeah. Yes. And I think that's the thing that makes going home so special, isn't it? You walk into the supermarket and just... And it's like the biggest trip to heaven ever, that you've got all of these things readily available to you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And but it's sometimes also overwhelming, I find, because you're not used to so much anymore, and you're just like, oops.
Yes. What? Okay, what's in your bag to take back with you when you go back at the end of the summer?
Lots of tampons. Lots of tampons.
Now, is it the tampons because you just can't find the tampons that you like, or is it that there just aren't a lot of tampons readily available, or is it because they're so expensive?
No, it's because I couldn't find them there, basically. Wow. Sometimes I could find them now in the American shop, I found it out, but not always. So I just bring them back so we have them. But I was running around, going to pharmacies and everything, and yeah, they didn't even know what it was, so I just dropped it.
And it's an interesting thing to try and explain to someone too, isn't it, when you're shopping
yes,
for tampons?
Exactly, yes.
Okay, what else? What else have you? Will you take
so
back?
We buy all the clothes and the shoes also outside Senegal, because there are not many shops there. There's just one little mall which has Zara and a bit like this, but it's 40% higher price than here. So we buy all this here in Europe, and then I buy basic medications, asthma treatment for one of my daughters here, and products for the feet, the shawl products, I like them, deodorant, day cream, body cream, Swiss cheese, because I like the Swiss cheese, not the French, and then the chocolate from Belgium, coffee beans, coffee pots, toothpaste, sun cream, mosquito repellent. You know, the fisherman friends, these peppermint things.
Yes.
Yes. And herbal teas, because I like very specific herbal teas. Back to school stuff also, like, you know, lists from the kids, like special calculators they need and things like this. Everything for dessert making. My kids love making desserts, so they make lots of cupcakes, and we don't find the cupcake holders there, and all these frosting utensils and coloring and everything like this. Yeah. So.
Wow, that's a great list. Is there anything that you find that you can get in Senegal that you then miss when you get home?
The mangoes. Mangoes are excellent there, the best ones. Yeah, I mean, they have lots of fresh fish and fresh seafood, lobsters and everything. That's very cheap there. But this is fresh products.
And now tell me, because I'm sure people listening would be busting to know, do you enjoy your life in Senegal? Is it somewhere that you would recommend as an expat location?
It's not easy in the beginning, because you have lots of electricity problems, lot of, you know, African problems. But I met lots of great people there, and I have a great life. I really enjoy it there. And it's just a different way of dealing with things. And, you know, like, if you need clothes, I have lots of friends. They make made the clothes, so they go and buy the material. They go to the tailor and they make everything do. Same with the shoes. They buy the leather. They go to the shoemaker and they let everything do. And for them, it's a game, you know. You do all this. It's a different way of living. And I really enjoy it. I really do. It is interesting. And people, they are really, really nice, very, how to say this, friendly, yeah, always smiling, and yeah, no, and there's a lot of things we can do and help them also being there, I think.
So, Cez, what did you think of Caroline?
Well, first of all, I love the accent. I love the French accent.
I know. She sounded fantastic, didn't she?
She did. And how lucky that she moved to a country that speaks her mother tongue.
I know. And you know, that was us in Northern Africa as well. Like, I would have done anything to have been able to speak French, is because you realise that there are so many countries in Africa that are French-speaking.
French-speaking, yeah. But I think Caroline gave some great tips to research online. And I must admit, that was one of the first things I did when we were moving to Abu Dhabi. I did Google, can I buy tampons in Abu Dhabi? Because there was no way I was wearing nappies, which is what I think pads are. And I really do think it all depends on where you're moving to. And as she said, you adapt. So, you know, a lot of the time here we can't get the best fruit and veg. So I then use a lot of frozen fruit and veg here. So if I'm making a smoothie, and, you know, strawberries, for example, in Doha can be hideously expensive. So I'll just buy a packet of frozen instead, which I would never have done.
I think
Caroline had a good point that you just have to adapt, and you sometimes end up finding products that you would never even knew existed and they become your favourite. You know, if it's, you know, here, it's hard to get buttermilk. And so instead I substitute and I use labneh, and I don't even think we'd be able to get that in many markets back home. So it's probably something I'll miss when we leave. So it's all about adapting really and trying new things, I think, and we're seeing what works.
Yeah, that's right.
Because in place of something else.
Yeah, labneh here in Australia, I think, has become this kind of novelty item, you know, that even, you know, people say labneh and it's all very, oh, yes, I went and I sourced labneh, whereas in the Middle East you mistakenly pick up the labneh instead of the milk at least, you know, once a month.
It's what I poured on my cereal. Very first time we moved to Abu Dhabi, I poured labneh on my cereal and not milk.
Yep, I did exactly the same thing and went, oh, yuck, this milk's really off. And
But here it's a great substitute for buttermilk.
You've just raised such a great point too, is that you do adapt, and that's part of the fun of going somewhere else, is you have to learn. You know, I know the remote places I've been to, they're the places that, you know, first of all, I learned how to bake, because there wasn't that just stop into the deli or just stop into the bakery, or, you know, you learn to do all these particular things. You know, we went to Libya, and we our biggest challenge was going to the butchers and being able to explain which part of the cow we actually wanted, because there it would be hanging up outside and all of a sudden you had to know, well, which bit do I actually eat? And which bit of that lamb am I actually going to eat? And so our biggest coup was we came back with an Australian livestock photo, you know, like the ones you see in the butchers where it points to all the different bits saying, you know, these are the ribs and this is where you get the rack and this is where you get the rump. And we were able to, A, make our local butcher very, very happy, because he had it up on in his butchers with pride, but also all of a sudden we became far more versed with what we were eating. Instead of just pointing to the bum and going, I'll have that bit, thanks.
Yeah. But I also think when you move to a new country, when you visit a new country, I love going through the supermarket, seeing what they have and what they don't have, and especially the fruit and veg section here in Doha. We obviously have a huge multicultural community here. So, you know, I don't know, you can get bags and bags of okra for the Indian expats, which you probably wouldn't see that much of in an Australian supermarket. It would probably tend to be more gourmet back home, whereas here you can get bags and bags of it. So I just find it really interesting walking around the supermarkets and seeing what back home we might consider exotic, whereas here it's just everyday.
That's right. And that was going to be my next question to you, Cez. Has it changed the way you see sort of gourmet food? Because I know it has for me. Like, you know, when I go home now, and I remember last summer in Australia, everyone was like, oh, yes, you know, we're putting pomegranate seeds in our salads, and everyone thought it was a bit fancy. And you're sitting there going, yeah, we can buy buckets of pomegranates that have all been seeded. Yes. You can buy the actual seeds in a cup. You know, it's just an everyday thing.
Everyday.
And you do, you know, you look at the okra. Yeah, you look at the okra and go, oh, yeah, you can buy bags and bags of okra. You can buy, you know, lots of labneh. You can buy pomegranate molasses. All those things are all part of
For me, it was the dukkha, which before we moved overseas, we got engaged in Margaret River in Western Australia, and we were touring all the wineries. And one of the sampling plates we had was with some olive oil and bread. And that is dukkha, this Middle Eastern spice mix, was the best thing we'd ever had. So we bought bags of it, and it was really expensive.
Yes.
So we would only put it out on platters when we had people over, if they were like our A-list friends, because the bags were expensive. and we couldn't get it in Melbourne. We could so if you came to my house in Melbourne and you had the dukkha, you know that you were our special friends. But here, it is just readily available. Dukkha's dukkha, and they've been eating it forever, and now it's a special to me because, like the pomegranate, you can go anywhere and just get like a cup of pomegranate seeds for cheap as chips, whereas back home it's this new whiz-bang superfood. And she was telling me the other day, and now I can't remember what grain it was, but there's, you know how quinoa and kale and all this new whiz-bang superfood, there's some new grain that's come out that everyone's raving about, but people in Ethiopia have been eating it for like hundreds of years and it's like nothing special, but to the Western world, it is the new in superfood.
That is so funny, Sez, because when I went to the Renmark Ladies Wine Club night, you know, a few weeks ago, one of the things, and it was very special, and I have to say it was a really fantastic night, but one of the things was, you know, they bring out all of these special foods that they've, you know, they've sat down and sort of thought over the menu for weeks and weeks, and then they get the matching wines. But one of the things was the pork came out, there was a big debate whether it was pork or it was something else, but it was then rolled in dukkha, except they were calling it, because you imagine we're in country South Australia, dukkha, we're having some dukkha. It was beautiful, and that is something that I would do, right? I would get the name completely wrong and be calling it the wrong thing for days before someone put me out of my misery. But yeah, the dukkha, we had it rolled in the dukkha.
And it seems like on a show like MasterChef back home, how they're like, oh, this lamb kofta, how very exotic. Whereas really kofta is just the Middle Eastern of a rissol. Do you know what
I mean? Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It's a rissol.
You're basically having mince on toast.
Yeah. But on MasterChef, it's exotic and special.
So, yeah, look, I love talking to Caroline, though. I thought she was fantastic and so
interesting. She was fantastic.
And she had been to some amazing places. It's not all of us that get to say we've spent 3 years in Israel.
Yeah.
Oh, just incredible, wasn't it? She was just a delight. And says she was so lovely at the end after we'd said goodbye and sort of wrapped up. She had said how much she enjoys reading the blog and listening to the podcast, which was just really lovely to think that there's someone in Senegal listening to us, which was wonderful. Back to what people take back. I was a bit fascinated with many of our American friends that were taking back their Cheerios and mac and cheese, because I had thought mac and cheese was possibly one of the most simplest things you could make without having to take back a box of Kraft mac and cheese. But is it just you get that taste from your childhood or something, and normal mac and cheese doesn't taste the same as Kraft mac and cheese? I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe the Kraft mac and cheese is something that you knock up for your kids when you couldn't be bothered doing a full gourmet meal. It might be that end of the week, the Friday night.
Yeah.
Can't be bothered cooking. You whip up some Kraft mac and cheese. But again, I think it all depends on where you're moving to, because the Kraft mac and cheese is readily available here for us.
Yes. A lot of people said they took back like a lot of Tex-Mex food. There were certain types of tin tomatoes they wanted for their Tex-Mex. And the Canadians were different again. The Canadians were talking about special wax paper and these things called SOS scrubbing pads.
Yes, I hadn't heard of those. I guess they're like a Brill scrubbing brush, maybe?
Yeah, and Crisco. Crisco featured prominently, which is a type of oil.
It is. Now, I had always seen on TV shows and cooking shows in America Crisco, and I was never quite sure what it was, because I don't think we can. I think kind of like Kofa back home that you make your chocolate crackles with.
Yeah.
I bought it here in Doha just to see what it was like, and it is just a tub of pure lard. But I do know. But I have it, and I use it for my roast potatoes.
Oh, really?
Yes, instead of olive oil.
Oh, so it just goes in the bottom of the pan, and that's what you're
saying. Yeah, so you put like a blob of it. I mean, it's heart attack in a tub, really. It is. So you just put a blob of it in your roast, you put that in the oven first and then it all melts. Then you throw your potatoes in and they crisp up perfectly.
Now, Stairs, another Canadian was saying they take back turkey stuffing bags. What are turkey stuffing bags? All right.
Like you can put stuffing in a bag and then it goes into the chook or the turkey? I don't know.
I don't know. We need someone to tell us that. So if anyone knows what turkey stuffing bags are, can you please come to our website, to fatexpats.com, and tell us. Explain to us what turkey stuffing bags are, because I didn't know that. The other one for Canadians, which they find us, it's so much cheaper in Canada, and having lived in Canada, I totally agree, is MAC cosmetics are so much cheaper in Canada than they are elsewhere.
Really? Well, it's a Canadian brand, isn't it?
Yes.
Not an American brand, it's a Canadian brand, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's really far less expensive than elsewhere. But the two stores that seem to feature prominently from North America were Costco and Superstore. So people just basically said they made a mad dash for Costco and Superstore and bought in bulk and then bought them home, which I think for me I'm probably a little bit like that with Target.
Oh, I love a good Target shop.
Yeah, or even a Big W shop, good Target or a Big W shop.
And Kmart, especially homewares now, they're doing really well with their homewares. The last year, Matt and I brought home 14 mason jars to make cocktails. And then the other day...
I do believe I've had a cocktail out of one of those mason jars.
Matt's cocktail. And I think they were $2 in Kmart. And then the other day, we were in Lakeland, which is a UK homeware baking store that's opened up in Doha. And their mason jars were like 5 times the price. So we were glad to do our Kmart mason jar shopping last year.
Yeah. And the personal items that made an appearance, says, apart from tampons, because we know tampons are top of the list of everybody's must have, but dry shampoo was a big one.
Yes.
People were searching high and low for dry
nappies.
Shampoo.
Nappies. Clara Williams, who lives in St. Lucia, bought 2 years' worth of nappies. I mean, that would have taken up so much space.
Oh, well, I've done that. I had to do that when we went to Libya. I took boxes of nappies in our air freight to get there and I had to count up because we had a newborn baby and a two-year-old. Mm-hmm. So I had to count up not only how many nappies I would need for my newborn baby, but then at what stage she would then move from the newborn size into the extra smalls and into the next and into the next. And I still had a two-year-old that was in, the nighttime nappies.
Yes, yep.
So we moved when our second child was sort of a couple of weeks old. So we had an air freight that was full of nappies that would last us and for the first, sort of 12 weeks until we figured the shipment would get there and we can get access to all the rest of the nappies that we put in the shipment.
Wow.
So it was very calculated. And I think from memory, I scored right down to the last week that I had before we got the shipments and I was able to. Yeah, so you just don't, And I mean, when I first moved to Jakarta, 16 years ago, everyone used to pack nappies to take with them. So, and for the Americans, we're talking about diapers, because I know that nappies sounds like such an awful word to North Americans rather than diapers, because quite often they hear nappies and they think sanitary napkins.
Something else. The Aussie way of saying a diaper or Pampers.
Yeah. So, yes, but I know when we moved, we took, I think the Australian customs people call them New Zealand Louis Vuitton bags. They're the, the red, white and blue mesh bags.
Oh, we call them loser bags. Matt and I call them loser bags.
Well, we took, 2 full loser bags when we first left and, each time we went home, we were buying another loser bag full of diapers to take back.
And there's an interesting question posed by Kimberly Hodges Cole on the Facebook page. She wanted to know, are people paying extra weight or extra luggage to bring all of this back? Because in the past, she's had to leave shoes behind so she could bring back frosting, icing, cake icing and shampoo. So she's asking for advice. So I don't bring enough back that warrants me to have excess luggage or anything like that. I really do make do what we've got, apart from my tongs, my veggie peelers and my cotties chopping. Everything else I sort of manage to keep.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm
so
a bit the same.
So if anyone has suggestions for Kimberly on how she can bring stuff back.
Yeah, definitely fill your shoes. But I think... I only get, when we fly Cathay, I'm sure that we all only get a 20-kilo bag each, much of which can be different than other airlines. Other airlines, you can get 35, or you might even get, so I think someone was telling me with KLM, you can get two bags access rather than just one. So when I fly back and I have all the children with me, we can, you know, then we've obviously got five lots of baggage allowance, so we can sort of mush it from person to person. But when it's just one person and you're flying with that 20 kilos, it doesn't take much at all to fill that up, you know, especially if you're going from summer to winter. So that's it's a tough one to know. I mean, I guess you could investigate air freight and whether it's worth doing that.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best thing to do if you're having to ship home heaps of diapers / nappies, maybe do the unaccompanied baggage and it gets a day or two after you arrive. That might be the best way to go, Kimberly, if you're tuning into this episode.
Yeah. What I wouldn't advise and what I don't think would work is if you ask someone to carry your bag through for you through the airport.
Excuse me, would you mind carrying my suitcase of tampons?
Could you imagine? Yeah, I promise. It's just coffee beans and tampons. So what else did we have, Sez? What were some of the other comments? I saw here that we had Melissa, who was moving from Canada to India, and she said breakfast cereal, chocolate chips, sushi rice, which I imagine you probably don't find a lot of in India, fitted bed sheets, because you'd think India would be the land of great linen and sheets and whatever, but obviously not fitted ones. Peanut butter, nighttime diapers, and I love here she's put in brackets kids because she wanted to make it known that they weren't her nighttime diapers. They were
her children.
Yes, and she's obviously eating a better diet than us because she's having chia seeds, quinoa, hemp seeds. She's having bacon bits.
Okay, I like
so thank
bit.
God she's not perfect.
Sorry if I'm not pronouncing the name correctly, but Perisone Hendricks, our Two Fed Expats Facebook page, she said, "We ever tried to buy a mousetrap in Doha?" And that made me giggle because I've never seen any mice in Doha, but apparently they do exist. And Perisone had to go into our hardware stores. Now, our hardware stores in Doha are not the hardware stores you get in America or the UK or Australia. They're sort of little hole-in-the-wall shops. And she had to do a game of charades to explain to them then what she's actually looking for. And suffice to say, after a day of doing charades in hardware stores, it had a long and happy life, the mouse did. So she's obviously never found the mouse. But I've never seen mouse traps in Doha.
No, and you don't think about mice sort of living long and large in Doha either. It's kind of
I've never seen any rats or mice.
No. Oh, that's quite funny. I've not thought about that. Now, if anyone's wondering why the sound sounds different, because I'm imagining I probably sound quite echoey is that while Sarah and I have been recording this podcast, I'm currently in Brisbane because I think it's important that we record the podcast in as many Australian cities as possible. So I'm in Brisbane because this is where G's family are from and we're here seeing G's family. And we're staying in an apartment and his cousins have arrived, but just before they arrived, we realised that the only place I had Wi-Fi was out in the main room, and so all the children and G had to go and hide in the bedroom while I spoke to you. And then we've had people have rang and arrived and I've now just hidden in the toilet. And
it was a loud doorbell ring. I've got a bit frightened for a second. It sounded like some type of alarm was going off.
So if you're wondering, I'm now standing here in the toilet holding my laptop with my headset on, talking to you. Says, I tell you what, no one can ever tell us that we haven't tried really hard to do this podcast.
And you know what I was just thinking? We could almost do a blooper roll of the last sort of 5 weeks of us recording on different sides of the world, because we say more, can you hear me? I can't hear you, broken up, can you hear me? It would make for a really good blooper roll.
I know, and then it's like, can you hear me? Oh, shit, oh, God. Look, I'm just going to keep talking. Can you hear me? And then it's like, I'll try you on Skype. Okay, I'll try it on FaceTime.
And we're talking over the top of one another because we can't see each other because we're doing it over audio, not over video conferencing. But we've made it. We've done 5 to 6 weeks of this. We've done it.
We have.
But I have to be honest, I can't wait to get underneath the bunk bed of the team's bedroom.
Oh, me too.
I will never complain about sweating under the bunk bed or under the stairs or have to mount G's bike ever again. I will mount his bike with love.
I feel exactly the same way. It's like, God, I can't wait to be in the same room at the same time. It's so much easier.
I know. We've done long distance relationship to the max the last couple of months.
Now, Suze, I wanted to, just before we go, I wanted to talk about some of the random things that people had taken back, because I was quite surprised to, A, sort of hear how much times have changed in what you can and can't take on an aircraft.
Yes.
Particularly seeing one of our readers told us she's travelled with a chainsaw and a rifle. And then clarified in brackets, but that was a little while ago. But somebody else had travelled, and we're talking about got on the plane.
Yes.
Someone else had got on the plane with an outdoor shower.
So Sarah Watson had got on a plane with a 20-kilogram chili bin of meat when she was going back to Myanmar. That's just blows my mind.
Someone else said an ice cream machine. Someone else said they took half a suitcase full of just tins of tuna.
Oh, you wouldn't want any of those of tuna to crack on that flight, would you?
My favourite visual one, though, was someone had said their husband had insisted on travelling with his, you know, 1970s lava lamp, and when he'd gone through customs, they'd wanted to know what it was, and he'd had to do a little disco dance to show them what the lava lamp was for. Someone else travelled with their cat in the cabin, which I thought was
different. Well, see, I think different. Because we come from Australia where you're not allowed to do that, whereas I think if you're travelling around, like if you're going to Europe if we had our dream holiday house in France, we could take our dog and cats with us. Not a problem. Whereas if...
Oh, my God. I'm just wondering how...
Can't do the go back to Australia.
Yeah, like how does the cat go to the toilet when it's in its cage on the plane in the overhead?
Maybe it has a bit of kitty litter in the cage. I don't know. Or maybe it holds.
I don't know. Do you know what that's just made me think of, though, the overhead in the cabin, was we were in the Gold Coast a couple of days ago and we were staying in an apartment, and by the swimming pool, like where the swimming pool and the spa was a sign saying, please don't use your shampoo and conditioner in this pool. And my sister and I were just giggling, thinking, well, somebody's done it.
Yes. Right? For them to put that more sign than one person done has done it, I think, to make for that sign.
And then she said that she can remember she caught the bus from, you know, Melbourne to Brisbane or something, like before she could afford to fly, and she got on the bus, and on the overhead sort of compartment, it had a sign up saying, do not let your children sleep in the overhead compartment.
Oh, my God.
Oh, could dear. You imagine just popping Sadie up in the overhead compartment?
Yeah, there you go, along with my carry-on of tampon and my pussy in its cage.
Your movie is a favourite of mine, and I'll tell you why after you tell everyone. I was very happy when I saw it on the running sheet. What did you pick,
Sue? The Diviner. Now, this movie's actually been out for a few months now, but it was never in Doha because they tend to only give us kids' films, hot films and action movies here. So it's available on iTunes, and if you happen to be living in the Middle East and you've got OSN, then it's currently on the OSN box office. But it's directed and stars Russell Crowe. And it's set during World War I, and he's a farmer that lives in Victoria, and he travels to Gallipoli in Turkey because his sons are soldiers and they've gone missing and they were fleeing World War I. Now, I think if Australian, obviously you know the history of Anzac, and if you're not Australian, Australia has a huge relationship with Turkey and had one of the biggest fights during World War One, and you know, when we celebrate Anzac Day and we think of World War One, we really do think of the soldiers lost their lives in Turkey. So this movie was fantastic, beautifully shot, fab acting, but I did have a giggle because there's a huge duck in the movie when he's living in rural Victoria, and it just made me think of not too far from living in Doha and the sandstorms that we get here. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie.
It is a beautiful movie, Sez, and I think it was released in Australia on Christmas Day from memory.
It's been out for a few
months. Yeah, so it's been out for a few months, and you're right, Russell Crowe's amazing, but there's two things I really loved about that movie. Was one is it gives you a really good perspective of just how many Turkish people died, like so many thousands and thousands more Turks
I think died. That's something sometimes brushed over when we I don't say you celebrate, when we commemorate Anzac Day, is the amount of lives of Turkish people that were lost that I think we don't discuss enough.
And the other thing I love, Sez, is the bit where it's in Gallipoli, when you see those amazing cliffs and the sand dunes and whatever. Do you know where that is?
In Australia.
It's where our beach house is.
Is it?
Yes, that's what it looks like, where our beach is. That's our beach.
How cool is that?
So it is incredibly cool. So we actually, you know how we do our outdoor movie nights?
Yes.
We had The Water Diviner as one of our outdoor movie nights. And where the beach is, all along the cliffs of South Australia there, when you get out to where we are, we're in an area called Port Wallunga, and it heads on up. Mm-hmm. And I think the movie was more shot in the beach just next door at Maslin's, but it has this beautiful sandy cliff side that looks very much how you would imagine it to look in Gallipoli. And the big thing is, our little Port Wallunga, there's really absolutely nothing there except for on sort of the old area, there's a fantastic little bakery, and there's a, you know, the real classic Aussie fish and chip shop, where you go in and get your docket and sit down on your plastic chair and wait for your three pieces of crumb fish. And Russell came in there and had a scallop pie. And and then enjoyed it so much he came back and had another.
Fantastic.
Yes, I know. It was very cool, very, very cool. So that's our big claim to fame.
And you
don't think we milk it much, do you?
No. There's fans everywhere saying Russell was here, Rusty was here.
Yeah, Russ, this is where Russell ate his scallop pie. Yeah. So he says, my favourite thing on the internet this week, there's a YouTube clip, and we'll have a link in on our website.
It is unbelievable.
The woman who gave birth to the 10-pound baby in the front seat of her car.
She was calm. She was so calm.
She was incredible. She was absolutely incredible. So if you haven't seen the video, we'll put it up on the website.
Her partner filmed it all on the GoPro while he was driving. They had been driving for 40 minutes. There was then, as usual with social media, there was a lot of nasty comments. Why didn't he pull over? What were they doing in the car? But they'd actually been driving for 45 minutes. So they must live quite rural to be driving that long to get to a hospital. And as it happens, sometimes babies just, they don't know that you're sitting in a car. They're ready to come out.
But she was incredible. Like you said, she was so calm because she was groaning, that, you know, little moans, little groans, and she just kept saying, I'm really worried, I'm really worried. But then when she says, I think it's coming out, and he just said something casually to her, would you like me to put the lights down? Now, and she's just, how she didn't reach over and just punch him in the face.
She was so calm. And then they high-fived at the end. Like, good job, babe.
Oh, yeah. And when he said, oh, look, we had a baby. It was like, no, you didn't. You drove the car.
It was amazing. It's definitely well worth the watch.
All right. Now, you had another social media pick as well.
This is another funny one. So last week I brought you Donald Trump and cats with toupees. And
I love that. I went straight to that Instagram site and I loved it. So that was the Trump and cat Instagram page.
And this week on the Huffington blog, I have found this mum, Jessie Hogg, is a photographer, and she spent the past year photographing her toddler daughter and their pet dog wearing the same props and in the same backgrounds, and they've tried, and it's just really cute, and some of them are really hilarious, but some of them are actually beautiful, and you could imagine her putting these images up around her house. They're a bit like, you know, the little girl goes to visit granddad, and the granddad's giving her a sweet, then the picture is the dog getting a sweet off the granddad, and and in the at the jungle gym at the park, it's really, really cute. So
cute.
She called the series Handfuls of Trouble. So I'll put the link in our website. We've been using the term show notes. We always say, oh, in the show notes, refer to our show notes. And I think it was sister-in-law that mentioned that not everyone knows what show notes are. So we actually have a website, www.twofatexpats.com, and that's where we actually put the link and any note that was spoken about in each episode. That's on our website. So if you wanted to go on either Donald Trump cats, or if you wanted to see them in giving birth, we'll put all the links there, and we sort of give a rundown of everything that we've spoken about on that each episode. So when we refer to show notes, it's actually our website.
Yes, and that's a really good point, Says. And you know, the thing is, we've just been using the term show notes, and we didn't even really know what show notes
were. We were using show notes the first three episodes, not knowing what show notes were, but we were just trying to get cool with the cool podcasting kids.
It says, when you go back and you listen, I don't know if you've gone back and ever listened to our first
Never.
One. We have no idea what we're saying. From memory, I think at one
stage.
Kirstie,
most
say,
of my life I have no idea what I'm saying.
I think at one point we say, oh, well, you could find that. I don't know. Do we? I think we actually say to each other, do we have a website?
I hate, because you listen to us more than I do, because you do all the editing. So you hear the dulcet of our voices constantly. I'm lucky to get through an episode, to be honest. I hate the sound of my voice. I feel like I come across as a complete and utter tool. Like last week, I still can't pronounce that country as a Bajajajan. I can't pronounce it. Matt was giving me lessons all week on how to pronounce it. I said Freddie Mercury was born there. He wasn't. He was born in Zanzibar. Like, I'm a tool. I can't believe people are still tuning in each week. So, you know, when I've always read interviews with Nicole Kimmel, she never watches her movies. I get it now. You're a bit of a tool. But now I hate going and listening to our episodes. Hate it.
I can listen to it if it's just me editing it. But if someone wants to listen to it, I think the weirdest one I've ever done is when you and I listened to it in the car on the way to dinner once, because we were trying to work something out and we were on our way. We'd been invited to dinner together for a blog thingy. And we listened to it and it just felt weird. It felt so bizarre to sit with you and listen. It was like, no, I can't do this. And then you think, oh, my God, if someone caught us listening to our own podcast, who do those girls think they are? Have you heard that they sit and listen to their own podcast?
I saw her at the traffic lights the other day, windows down with her bloody podcast blaring.
We do not do that.
I cringe. For the week in between our podcast recordings, I cringe with the stupid things and the words that I make up. So,
but still have people tuning in. And usually I would delete the as a bizarre. And it wasn't until I saw you write somewhere, oh, and you'll get to hear me not mispronouncing. I thought, oh, shivers, was that still in there? I'd missed that bit.
Well, I can't say that. I'm very sorry to the people of Azerbaijan. I'm very sorry.
Okay, so it says we're away now.
Yes.
In the month of August. We're both going to have a break. I am fully back into university now, and we're into the end of week two, so I've got a lot of catch-up to play. So we're going to have a month away from the podcast while you come home and have a little holiday in Sydney, and I will. And I'm back to solo parenting because G will head back to Doha. So please be patient with us while we have this month off. But
we want to say we're coming back for season two. I mean, that's a real reason.
Yes.
We've been picked up for season two.
Oh my gosh, yes. Oh, look, we have to call it season two.
It season two. We've been picked up for season two. And by picked up, that's you and I deciding we're coming back. No one else is.
Although we do have exciting things with sponsorship in season two to talk about, but we're not going to talk about that until
season one cliffhanger to make people come back for season two.
Yes. Mm. But it is exciting though. We do have a very exciting sponsor that we're very excited about, and we're looking forward to doing some very silly and fun stuff with our new sponsor. Mm-hmm. But that all happens in season two. So we will say goodbye for now.
Yes.
Goodbye for August. And we'll see you all
in September.
In September.
Bye for now.
Bye.